searching for that time to get on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance.
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
It doesn't get any easier as the season moves on. The road games get tougher and tougher.
There's not an easy answer to that.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Well, one out of three ain't bad. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at tsn1290.ca, we welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I welcome you, as both Ezzy and Dave have the weekend off. So you're stuck with me, your host, Drew Mandel, for the next 2 hours of hockey talk on this beautiful Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. You can always reach us in studio if you want to get your 2 cents in on whatever we're going to be talking about, likely the Winnipeg Jets. That's usually what stirs most of the commentary in this fine sporting city. At Illegal Curve is the best way to do that. You can also send us a text. You can do that to 129090. You can text us. We get it here in studio. Standard messaging rates do apply. Send us a text at 129090. And, of course, our website that's got the latest Winnipeg Jets news. Not a ton on that front. No surprise, given it is the 29th of July. We're sort of into the sleepy season when it comes to the world of the NHL. There's some outstanding arbitration cases, none here in Winnipeg anymore. Connor Hellebuck was scheduled to go to arbitration. I believe that was set to happen next Tuesday, the 1st of August. We know, of course, that's no longer going to be the case, as he and the Jets did agree to that one-year contract that happened about a week ago, 10 days ago now. So the Jets, all quiet for the most part on the Jets front right now. The same for most of the NHL teams, as general managers, players, coaches, everybody really takes a couple weeks off to enjoy the beautiful dog days of summer. What a beautiful day. What a beautiful week here in Winnipeg. It's going to be a great week. As I just, I'm excited. I haven't heard a ton of buzz around the Canada Summer Games, but I know that I'm excited for the Canada Summer Games. And sure, they're not professional athletes, but these are going to be some great athletic events. Strongly encourage you, if you're available, if you're looking for something to do, particularly if you're looking for something to do with your kids. Maybe your kids, they're out of school. You're looking for something to, spend some time doing over the next 2 weeks. The Canada Summer Games, they get my endorsement. They get my seal of approval. Not sure how much that actually counts for anything, but get a check mark next to that box from my perspective. How about that Bomber game? I know we're going to talk about hockey, but I got to go back to that Thursday night Bomber game. What a comeback by the Big Blue. That's a game they had, at the start of the game. Before that game even started, I would have said, if they want to be considered a real contender, a playoff threat in the Western Division, well, you have to take care of business against the East. That's what we've seen from the CFL season all season long, is that the West beats up on the East. That's been the case for the last, well, certainly this year so far, last year, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. The West has been the powerhouse, no doubt. The East has sort of been the weak sister, sort of how it was in the NHL a number of years ago, where the Western Conference beat up on the Eastern Conference. Well, things did not look good for the Big Blue on Thursday night, as they were, Montreal had that game in hand. There's no reason for the Bombers to have won that game except for the Alouettes simply fell asleep for the final 90 seconds of that game. And it's amazing just how quickly things can turn, especially in the CFL. You heard Matt Nichols say it on the broadcast on TSN after the game. The crazy football league certainly was that. I've seen some great comebacks. This is the first great comeback at IG Field. We saw a bunch over at the stadium on Maroons Road there, the old Canadiens field, the old Bombers stadium. I remember when I was a kid, this would have been at least probably 20 years ago, I had won a contest to have some sideline passes to sit on the sidelines to watch the Bomber game. And I was there with my buddy Jack, And this is – the Bombers were down by – oh, I don't remember what they were down by. But it was another one of those stirring comebacks. And I remember they caught the ball, the Bombers did, to take the lead late in the game. Really, the game-winning touchdown. It was in the south end zone, the south – let me do some geography in my head. The southeast corner of the end zone. And that's right where our seats were on the field for that game. And when we caught it, the place went absolutely ballistic. And it was just like that. On Thursday night at the stadium. That is, of course, if you stayed. I know three people that went to the game, two of the three. They were in the car listening to the comeback at that point in time. Anyways, that's just a little bit on that Bomber game on Thursday night. We got Ted Wyman coming up in about 10 minutes' time. He's with the Winnipeg Sun. Wouldn't be surprised if I ask him another question about that Bomber game. He covers the Jets, also covers the Bombers. So Ted's going to join us. Look around the Winnipeg sports scene. How about that on this Saturday morning? There's nobody really here to tell me, and really this would be Ezzy who would tell me to try and, no, we don't really want to talk about that, or no, we don't want to talk about that. Hey, they're not here. It's my show today. I really like it. They may hate me for a couple weeks after that, but that's okay. That's a good risk I'm willing to take. What they don't know can't hurt them. Ezzy gone fishing, I believe, on his fishing trip, and Dave out at the lake for a boys' weekend, and wish them both well. They'll be back next Saturday here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Start, of course, with the Winnipeg Jets after that lengthy preamble. And the question that has been posed to me more than anything this offseason is, have the Jets done enough? Have they done enough this offseason to make themselves a playoff team in the ultra-competitive Central Division? And it's a good question. I know, we all know what they've done, and we all know what their priorities were in the offseason. When the offseason started, when the season ended last April in that disappointing manner where they weren't a playoff team, yet again, I might add, everyone said the priority for the Winnipeg Jets is to get a goaltender and to get a left-side defenseman. So, they did that. They did both. And in my books, they get some credit for that. Steve Mason, maybe you quibble. Maybe he wasn't the goaltender you wanted. Maybe you wanted to see them be more aggressive. Maybe you were more in the market for a guy like Brian Elliott. Perhaps that was the goalie you wanted. Maybe Antti Raanta. Maybe Scott Darling, who we know went to the Carolina Hurricanes. Antti Raanta went to the Arizona Coyotes. Maybe Steve Mason isn't the goalie that you preferred the Jets to sign, but at least they signed a goalie. They have a veteran backstop who can either carry the team, or he can be a good support for Connor Hellebuck, or however the situation ends up playing out, the Jets are certainly more solid in net this season than I would say they have been at any point since they came back. We know what Pavlik did in flashes, but Andre Pavlik, clearly his time was up here in Winnipeg, and he's moved on to the New York Rangers. And then the Jets went and they dealt with their left side defenseman spot by acquiring Dmitry Kulikov. Now, take the money out of the equation for the time being. Because when they signed Dmitry Kulikov and they said it's for $4.33 million and it's a 3-year deal, I thought, oh, $4.33 million for 3 years. That's a fair contract. Then I found out that it was a $4.33 million contract per season. And I said, well, it's not my money. I'm glad it's not my money because that is a significant overpay in my estimation, but so be it. The Jets needed a left-side defenseman. They went out and they got that left-side defenseman. So Steve Mason, check. Dmitry Kulikov, check. They signed a bunch of other guys, but let's be honest, I don't think any of us expect to see Michael Scarbosa playing a big role with this team going forward. He got the only other one-way contract. I don't think people really expect him to be in the Jets lineup on a regular basis. Other guys got AHL-only deals. Good for them. Or, pardon me, AHL, NHL two-way deals. Good for them. If they make it up to the Jets, things have probably gone a little haywire for the Jets, but we'll deal with that come October, November, December when the season's underway. So the question, as I've mentioned, is have they done enough? And you have to look at their competition in the Central Division to determine that. Remember, only there's 7 teams in the Central. Only 5 of those 7, that's max, 5 out of those 7 are going to be able to make the playoffs from the Central Division. We know the Avalanche aren't going to be an option. We can just sort of eliminate them from the equation immediately. We know that they're not a playoff team. That's one of the worst rosters that I can even imagine. You know, when I was going through their off-season acquisitions, this is a team that was the worst team in the league last year, and they're certainly going to be, barring something tremendously unforeseen, the worst team in the league again. I mean, when your big off-season acquisitions are Colin Wilson, who they got from the Predators via trade, Jonathan Bernier, who's established himself as a decent backup goaltender at best in the NHL, and the reclamation project that is known as Nile Yakupov, you know that that's not going to be a very good team. So be it. So the question is, can the Jets beat out one of the St. Louis Blues, Minnesota Wild, Chicago Blackhawks, Nashville Predators to make the playoffs? I didn't mention the Dallas Stars because last season the Dallas Stars weren't a playoff team. But that was a surprise to many people last season, as the Dallas Stars have all the talent in the world. You know, Tyler Seguin, fantastic hockey player. Jamie Benn, fantastic hockey player. And we know what the problems were that the Stars had last year. And that was goaltending. Well, they think they've solved that problem by acquiring Ben Bishop, ex of the Tampa Bay Lightning. And defense, well, they think they've solved a big piece of that problem by acquiring Mark Mathot. Last played in Ottawa, briefly was a member of the Vegas Golden Knights as part of the expansion. Now he's with the Dallas Stars. So they've certainly solidified a couple of the pieces that they needed. They also added to their offense, adding some secondary offense. Alex Radulov, he comes over from Montreal. Martin Hanzel, he was with Minnesota last year after they acquired him at the trade deadline. Things didn't go fantastic, but he's now going to be on the Dallas Stars, probably playing a solid third-line center role for the Dallas Stars. I think that makes a lot of sense. Somewhere in there, he's just another good, solid depth forward, big body guy. Tyler Pitlick comes over from the Edmonton Oilers. And then the biggest acquisition of them all, from my estimation, for the Dallas Stars, is Ken Hitchcock. I mean, whatever you want to say about Ken Hitchcock, and sure, he may not have had the playoff success that you would have liked. At least it's been a while since he had this playoff success. He's a damn good coach. And I, for one, would be surprised if Ken Hitchcock, alongside Seguin and Ben, Bishop, Mathot, a lot of the players I just mentioned, Jason Spezza still there, a little older, still a good player though. I'd be surprised if Ken Hitchcock can't get that Dallas Stars team back into the playoffs. Then you move to a team like the Chicago Blackhawks. Well, we know what the Chicago Blackhawks are. They're usually a perennial presence trophy contender, sometimes winner, Stanley Cup winner. Last season, they were a solid playoff team. Not even a solid playoff team. They were a favorite in the first round. They got absolutely steamrolled by the juggernaut that was the Nashville Predators, but I think anybody who says that they saw that coming would be lying in that instance. So the Chicago Blackhawks, well, they've had to retool their lineup like they do each and every season on the fly due to their salary cap issues. So out goes Artemi Panarin. Out goes Nicholas Chalmerson, to name two of the bigger players that left. I mentioned earlier Scott Darling, but he was their backup. You know, very good quality backup, but Corey Crawford's still in net there. And so who do they bring back in? They bring in Brandon Saad. He comes over from Columbus as part of the Panarin trade. Connor Murphy, he comes over as part of the Chalmerson trade with Arizona. Added some other pieces. They bring back Patrick Sharp. See if they can catch lightning in the bottle with him. A little bit older in his career, off a bad year in Dallas, but he knows Taves, he knows Kane, he knows that organization better than anybody. So are the Chicago Blackhawks not going to be a playoff team this coming season? I'd be surprised. I'd be very surprised. Nashville Predators. Well, they've been an absolute... They were the Stanley Cup finalists from the Western Conference last year. Anybody think that they're going to drop off out of the playoffs after they bring back pretty much the same team, bringing back the core, the best defense in the NHL? They signed Ryan Johansson last night, or yesterday afternoon, rather. He gets 8 years, $8 million a season. Nashville Predators, despite signing all their players, still have cap space. David Poile's a wizard, their general manager. They still have $5 million in cap space. Nashville Predators aren't going anywhere. That's going to be a playoff team. The caveat, of course, with all this is if you suffer a tremendous amount of injuries, things can change. But right now in the offseason, you have to expect that no one's going to suffer those injuries, even though we know who does, or we know that somebody always does, but have to wait and see for that. Then you go to the St. Louis Blues. Well, the Blues struggled for a lot of last season. They were up and down. Jake Allen was a bit of a wreck for a little while. Remember, we all remember the game where they kept him at home in St. Louis rather than playing him here in Winnipeg because he couldn't stop a beach ball. Well, he recovered. He settled in. They won their first round playoff matchup against the Minnesota Wild. What do they do this offseason? Well, not overwhelmingly active, but they bring in a guy like Braden Schenn. I like Braden Schenn's game. I think that's a great trade. You can acquire Braden Schenn in exchange for Jori Lehterä. Lehterä had a bad year for the Blues. Braden Schenn, well, you know what he is. He can play center. He can play wing. He's just another very good depth forward for the St. Louis Blues. They lose Ryan Reeves. We know the guys at Vertuity Mortgage aren't going to like that, but I think they'll still be okay with that. Ryan Reeves. Chris Thorburn goes there, ostensibly maybe to replace Reeves. I'm not sure that Thorburn still has that game in him, but good for Chris to get a two-year deal. Certainly a fan favorite here in Winnipeg. I don't know that the Blues are going anywhere. Then you got the last team on the list. That's the Minnesota Wild. Well, the Wild were one of the stories of the NHL last year. They were a juggernaut. They geared up for what they thought was going to be a lengthy Stanley Cup playoff run. They thought they were going, this is their year. They had all the tools in place. They go out, they acquire Martin Hanzel. They give up a lot of draft picks. They give up a lot of prospects. Things didn't work out. We know they lost in the first round. This year, they acquire Marcus Foligno and Tyler Ennis from the Buffalo Sabres. That's their big sort of off-season acquisition. Kyle Quincy, defenseman, he's going to go to Minnesota. And sure, the Wild struggle in the playoffs. And Bruce Boudreau, their head coach, struggles in the playoffs. But he's one of the best regular season coaches in the NHL. So are the Wild going to be the team that drops off? Is Devan Dubnyk, has he played too much hockey finally? Is he going to come back down to earth a little bit? It all starts with Dubnyk, of course. He's got a good defense in front of him. That defense hasn't really suffered any losses. They were able to prevent the Vegas Golden Knights from taking one of their really good defensemen. They have some arbitration hearings still. That needs to be worked out. I believe Granlund and Niederreiter are going to be are arbitration eligible, and they're going to for hearings unless deals get done with them. But are the Minnesota Wild going to be not going to be a playoff team this coming season? I don't know. But I know that on July 29th, as I sit here, the Jets, with their two acquisitions, I don't know that they've been able to leapfrog ahead of any of the other teams they're battling with in the Central Division. And maybe they'll do it by internal growth. Maybe Patrick Laine, he's going to be better in his second year. He was fantastic in his rookie year. He's going to be better in his second year. Maybe Nikolaj Ehlers, Scheifele, Trouba, what happens with him? Tyler Myers healthy all season. So it's not an impossibility for the Jets. But when people ask me on the street, hey, do you think the Jets have done enough to get to their playoffs? Are they going to be a playoff team this coming season? Boy, oh boy, they're in for a dogfight. When we come back, Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun joins us. Talk a little bit more about the Jets, maybe touch on the Bombers. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
On the Curve, on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Yeah. 20 minutes past the top of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel with you on this Saturday morning. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Good friend of the program. You know him from the Winnipeg sports scene. Ted Wyman from the Winnipeg Sun joins us now. Teddy, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Drew. How are you?
I'm well, Ted. How are you?
Really well, and nice to be brought in with some Nirvana. I like that.
There you go. That's producer Rory doing the great job behind the board, as always. Ted, obviously brought you on. We'll talk about the Jets, but I got to go back to Thursday night. I mean, you know, when there was 90 seconds to go in that game, be honest, was your game story written? Were you about to press send? Was it about to be up on the Winnipeg Sun website?
I heard Ed Tate on your station yesterday and saying that exact thing, that he admitted that he had been writing the Bombers have lost story, and, you know, I was nodding my head saying, of course I was doing the same thing. You kind of had to, right? Like, the game is very tight to our deadlines as it is, so you kind of have to do it. that way. Mm-hmm. But obviously when Steph Logan scored with, I think, about 140 left in the game, it was just pretty obvious that that was the way it was going to go. The Bombers hadn't moved the ball in the fourth quarter all season long, and then all of a sudden, I don't know why Montreal played the way they did, and I don't know where it came from on the Bombers' side, but boy, was that ever an incredible 95 seconds.
It really was, and 95 seconds that people will remember for a lifetime. You know, you've covered the team for many, many years at this point in time, not to put too much emphasis on many, Ted. does this comeback rank anywhere in particular in your mind? I mean, we know about the couple different Miracle on Maroons that happened back at the old stadium. This one's just sort of a whole new level in your mind?
Well, I mean, given the circumstances of the way this season has been going,
yeah,
where they've actually been blowing fourth quarter leads, it certainly stands out. I can think of some great comebacks in the past. I remember covering a Labor Day game in Saskatchewan in the 90s when the Bombers scored 10 points in the last minute, a touchdown and a field goal. And there was a turnover in between from the Rough Riders. So, I mean, that's the kind of thing where, you remember those moments. This one, obviously, has a chance to be somewhat of a defining moment for the Bombers. I doubt it will, because they didn't want last week to be a defining moment when they blew that lead against BC. And I doubt that they'll want to hinge too much on what they did here in those 95 seconds. But it certainly has the potential to be something we look back on if this season turns very well in the Bombers' favor.
Well, 3-2 and 2-1 at home sounds a lot better than 2-3 and 1-2 at home. So
it sure does.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been an incredibly different story had Montreal held on for the win, because you'd be looking at it and saying, well, look at the standings. Look at Edmonton. They're 5-0, BC 4-2, Calgary 3-1-1. The Bombers, if they're sitting at 2-3, you're all of a sudden saying, well, basically the crossover is going to be their best chance, and that's not a great situation.
No,
nobody's ever won a Grey Cup through the crossover. So I think that this team wants to be part of the mix with those three teams I already mentioned and fight it out with them for one of the top three spots, and they're going to have to win games against teams like Montreal at home in order for that to happen.
Absolutely. Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun joins me on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ted, let's shift gears to the Winnipeg Jets. I'm not sure if you heard the opening segment or not, but I was sort of discussing the question that is posed most often to me this offseason, I'm sure you're getting it a lot as well, is have the Jets done enough with the acquisitions of Steve Mason and Dmitry Kulikov? Have they done enough to propel themselves into a playoff position at the expense of one of the other Central Division, at the expense of one of the other Western Conference teams? And, breaking it down, going through roster by roster, boy, they're still going to be in a dogfight in that Central Division.
Yeah, you really like to throw the easy questions at me Saturday morning. Well, as you know, and I've heard many people on your station talk about, the Central Division doesn't necessarily look like it's going to be any easier for anyone to make the playoffs. It's going to be a real dogfight, there's no question. The hope is, of course, for a team like Winnipeg that somebody is going to drop back, and but who's that going to be? And that's a real question right there. So you have to forget about that, and you have to say, are the Jets good enough to be there on their own merit? And I think that this was a pretty good team last year that probably would have made the playoffs with an elite goaltender or above average goaltender. They did not have that. They didn't play a tremendous defensive style either, so you can't blame it all on goaltending, but they were close, They had a great offensive team, and hey, they're just like the Bombers, a great offensive team and a bad defensive team, right? But they really looked like a team that was close, and they needed to add a couple of pieces. I think Kevin Cheveldayoff did everything he possibly could to get those couple of pieces, and what he ended up with was Steve Mason and Dmitry Kulikov. Are those the best possible players they could have brought in here to make this team better? No, I don't think so. But there's constraints in Winnipeg that he has to deal with, and he managed to do something. He gave Paul Maurice some pieces that should make them a better team. So if they're 4 points out of the playoffs last year, are they going to be 4 points better this year? They should be. They should absolutely be in the mix for that playoff spot. And, I think this team is on the rise, but it's got to really put it together. And Paul Maurice, the ball is in his court. He's got to do a great job with this team and bring to bring them to a next level.
Well, Ted Wyman, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, you mentioned Paul Maurice. That contract extension certainly doesn't seem like it's coming at this point in time. Would you agree with that statement?
And he doesn't care. I talked to him at the draft, and he didn't care about it. That's not an important thing in his world, he says. One way or the other, things will happen the way they happen. But, you know, he's got to, like, I wouldn't want to give him a contract extension right now, personally, because this team, he has to be able to show that he can do something with the pieces that they've given him. They've done an incredible job of drafting. They've got some really good players here that they've developed, and now they've tried to bring in a couple of pieces that they think can make them better. They've only got a little bit of time left with some of their big stars. Well, you know, guys came over from Atlanta. I don't know if stars is the right word, but Blake Wheeler and Brian Little and guys like that, and Toby Enstrom, those guys, you know, certainly not all of them are going to be around here much longer. Their contracts are running out, and they need to spend the money on other younger players. So the time is becoming, it's becoming that time when they have to make some hay. And if Paul Maurice can't do it, it has to be somebody else. So I would absolutely not envision that contract extension coming.
I would agree with you on that point. Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun joining me on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The Jacob Trouba contract situation. I don't think it's a surprise to say that the Jets want him under a long-term deal. You know, Jacob has said all the right things since returning and signing with the Jets after the brief holdout last year. Is his contract status, does that have the potential to sort of maybe provide a bit of a cloud over the upcoming season to the does he, will he, won't he question?
Well, will it be a cloud or will it be us in the media who want to talk about it a lot? I mean,
that's what we're good for.
I think that's what we do, right? Yeah. And that's exactly what we will do. Do they want to sign him to a long-term contract? Of course they would like to. I just don't know if that's possible. I mean, I don't have any great insight for you, Drew, on whether Jacob Trouba is willing to do that. If this situation that he wanted, which he said before last season when he didn't have a contract yet and they weren't able to agree until, I think, 15 games into the season, if that situation is true, which was that he didn't like the way he was being used by the team, well, that's been rectified. And he was a number one defenseman for the Winnipeg Jets by the end of the season. Unquestionably, I thought their best defenseman overall. He's going to be given that opportunity again in an excellent situation with Josh Morrissey, they complement each other very well. I think they have a chance to be number one pairing for the Jets and really shine. And if there's any truth to the fact that he wanted a good situation for himself as a player with a team full of young guys who should be on the rise, then there's no reason in my mind why he shouldn't be here. But if there are other reasons that he really doesn't want to be here, that he wants to live in the States and play in the States, then he's got the opportunity to make that happen at least in a few years, because the way that free agency works, he could conceivably just sign one-year contracts until he's done here. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the Jets would want to do that, because then they'd lose an asset for nothing. So it's going to be a very tough job for Kevin Cheveldayoff to negotiate that all the way through here for the next few years, and unless they decide they have to make a deal right away and get what they can as soon as possible.
Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ted, cycling back to the goaltender question for a minute. You know, when Steve Mason, he was sort of vocal last season in Philadelphia about not loving the timeshare situation that he was in. Now, he comes here in Winnipeg, and presumably he comes here to Winnipeg to, if he performs well enough to be the number one goaltender, to get the majority of the starts. Do you think that it's going to take a sort of a delicate hand from the Jets organization to massage the ego of Connor Hellebuck? And I don't say that in a negative sense, but this is a goaltender, a young player who was given the chance to run with the ball last year, had some flashes, but more often than not was inconsistent, and now you're sort of demoting him to the backup role. Do you think that's going to take a deft touch to sort of keep his spirits high going forward?
No, I don't, because I think that he was given an opportunity. He was not able to do it. He was given an opportunity too early, so maybe there would be some people in his camp who would not be happy about that. But he's in a situation now where he's re-signed. He has an opportunity in my opinion, no matter what they say when they sign Steve Mason about being the starter, if Connor Hellebuyck plays lights out in training camp, if he plays lights out in every opportunity that he gets to play for the Winnipeg Jets, and they win hockey games when he's in the net, he's going to get a chance to play more than people think he has right now. If he's outshining Steve Mason, I don't see any question that Connor Hellebuyck will be the goalie for the Winnipeg Jets. So, you know, I don't know how many opportunities he is going to get. If he doesn't play well in his opportunities, he's not going to get that many. And Steve Mason, if Steve Mason is the savior for this team, then so be it. But I don't think anything is set in stone as to who plays the majority of the games for the Winnipeg Jets. If I was a betting man, I'd say right now it's going to be Steve Mason. But many, many things can change.
Ted Wyman covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Sun. He also covers the Bombers for that fine newspaper. Ted, appreciate your time this morning. I'll let you get back to your weekend. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Drew. Have a good one.
Likewise, Ted. Let's head to break. When we come back, star power in the NHL. Do the Jets have enough of it? And if so, should they be doing more with it? I'll explain after the commercials. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Good! With some speed into the Anaheim zone. In it goes! Short side score!
Highlight of last year's Winnipeg Jets season, Blake Wheeler from Ehlers. Heard that a couple times. Jets fans want to keep hearing that in the 2017-18 season. Only 6 weeks away. Can you believe it? 6 weeks away from the first sort of exhibition game. Really only about a month away, I think, from the prospects camp and the prospects tournament out in Penticton. We have coverage of it, of course, here on TSN 1290. Like we always do, your home of the Winnipeg Jets. That's what we are. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm Drew Mandel, flying solo on this Saturday morning. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. I was reading an interesting article, an interesting analysis on the Hockey News website about last week or so. Didn't have a chance to bring it up until today, but today's as good a day as any. Talking about star players and star power in the NHL. And it sort of went back to the roots of the analysis were done by the NBA. I think it was an analysis done by 538.com. That's ESPN's analytics website, where it said, do you need to have a star player in the NBA to win a title? And we know that you do. And the numbers bore that out. So the author of this piece, Dom Luchishin of the Hockey News, sort of looked and said, if you have star players in the NHL, how does that affect your chances? So he used game score. And game score is a piece of statistical analysis that takes into account a lot of the traditional stats, goals, assists, some of the new age stats, Corsi, shot differential, things of that nature, and comes up with a number. And basically, the star players in the NHL usually have a game score over 1.0. And then, there's tiers at that point in time. The tier two players generally have a game score from 0.89 through 0.95. Tier three from 0.82 to 0.87. Tier 4 from 0.77 to 0.81, and Tier 5 from 0.71 to 0.76. That's the forwards. It's a little less for defensemen, a little bit different for goaltenders, but you get the point. Five sort of tiers. And so Dom in his analysis went through and said, okay, if we assign 5 points for every player that you have in Tier 1, and you assign 4 points to every player you have in Tier 2, and 3 points for tier three, and 2 points for tier two, and 1 point for tier one, et cetera, et cetera. How does that point total added up for a particular team, how does that correlate with playoff success, with Stanley Cup success? And so he did his analysis, and nearly half of the teams that have 20 or more quote-unquote star points make it to the conference final in a particular year. So just under 50% of the teams that have more than 20 star points make it to the conference final. 20% of the teams that have more than 20 star points make it, win the Stanley Cup in its entirety. And about 35% of teams that have 20 or more star points make it to the actual final. So there's a decent correlation. This is going back the last decade. There's a decent correlation between having star points based on this game score statistic and making it all the way to the Stanley Cup, certainly being a playoff team. Okay, pretty interesting analysis. So I went, and he continues on, and he looks at all the teams. He sort of takes that game score stat, and he projected it for 2017-18. So they used historical stats, previous performance, and they projected game score for all sorts of players in the NHL for the upcoming season. And said, okay, how many, you know, what teams have the most star points? Well, the Nashville Predators, no surprise given some of their quality defensemen and their quality forwards, have the most star points in the entire NHL. They have 22 star points. Well, makes sense. They were the Stanley Cup finalists last year. So the Nashville Predators up at the top of the league with 22 star points. Third on the list, the Pittsburgh Penguins. They have 20 players. They have 20 star points, rather. They have two players that are quote-unquote tier one superstars, if you will. I think you know who I'm talking about, Sidney Crosby. He's up there for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Actually, Chris Letang qualifies as a defenseman as well. And then they have Evgeny Malkin. Here's apparently a tier two star player. They have a couple guys who are tier three players, a bunch of guys who are tier four. They're well-balanced. They get 20 star points. Washington Capitals, they're fourth with 19 star points. Calgary Flames, they're fifth with 19 star points as well. Tied with the Capitals, if you will, alongside with the Bruins as well. You may notice that I skipped over the team that has the second most star points in this analysis. You'd be surprised, maybe, find out that according to GameScore, the Winnipeg Jets, your hometown Winnipeg Jets, your perennial playoff-missing, disappointing Winnipeg Jets, have the second most star points in the entire NHL. Blake Wheeler, he's a tier one player. He's a superstar, according to GameScore. He's a tier one player. Mark Scheifele, Dustin Byfuglien, they're tier two players. Nikolaj Ehlers, Patrick Laine, Patrick Laine, Jacob Trouba, they're tier three players. Nikolaj Ehlers, he's a tier four player. Jets have a lot of star power, second most in the entire NHL. Yet, they're not, they haven't been, they're in tough to be, a playoff team. This despite a stat that would suggest that with their star power, they should be a top four team. They should be a conference finalist 50% of the time. So the question is, do the Winnipeg Jets do enough with their star power? Now, I think most people would say that are listening to this, well, your big problem that you mentioned there, Drew, is goaltending. And you can't do, no, it doesn't matter how much offensive firepower you have, doesn't matter how good your defense is to some degree. When you have the quality of goaltending that the Winnipeg Jets have, you just can't, doesn't matter how many stars you have, you just can't get it done. You can't be a consistent playoff team with that quality of goaltending. It's a valid point, I would suggest. Probably pretty fair. But you wonder, given this analysis, are the Winnipeg Jets wasting the primes of some of their star players with this lack of goaltending? If Steve Mason and Connor Hellebuck don't work out this season, and I think the Jets goaltending is going to be better. So that's, you know, I'm optimistic about the Jets goaltending. I have concerns about other issues on the team. But if the goaltending isn't good this year. Have they wasted another year as it pertains to their quote-unquote star points, as it pertains to their star power? The second most star points in the entire NHL projected as they enter the 2017-18 season. Playoffs shouldn't be just good enough when you have this amount of talent. Expectations should be higher. Expectations should be a lengthy playoff run if you buy into this star point argument. Expectations should be conference finalist, potentially. Going to be very interesting for the Winnipeg Jets, for the fans of the Winnipeg Jets, if they're going to be able to put everything together this coming season. Second most star points in the entire NHL. Head of the Penguins. Head of the Capitals. Head of the Blackhawks. Will the Jets put it all together? We'll know more by April, that's for sure. We'll know more certainly before April. But it's some interesting food for thought that a team that's got tremendous amount of talent should be a perennial playoff team. Should be potentially a conference finalist 50% of the time based on this amount of star points. Will be interesting to see if they can put it all together in this upcoming 2017-18 NHL season. Scott Powers covers the Blackhawks for TheAthletic.com in Chicago. He's going to join us next to talk about the Blackhawks offseason. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Here's another 2-2. Swung on and hit hard.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. A beautiful Saturday morning here in Winnipeg. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Our website also, illegalcurve.com. This segment of the show, it's brought to you by Keener Jerseys. You just heard the ad. It's a great ad. Keener Jerseys, known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. You can also visit them at their showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. I was just there this week, had to pick up some jerseys. They got a great display, wall display of some of the jerseys they've made for some of the teams in and around the city. They do such fantastic work. They're great guys. Go check them out. Keener Jerseys, 982 Portage Avenue, or also online, keenerjerseys.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Scott Powers. Scott covers the Chicago Blackhawks for TheAthletic.com in Chicago. Scott, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us. How's the summer?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Scott. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Jets' big Central Division rival there in the Blackhawks. And I have to go back to April. I mean, the Blackhawks came into the playoffs flying high. A lot of teams pick to possibly represent the Western Conference in the finals, maybe even win the Stanley Cup yet again. And then they got absolutely steamrolled by what turned out to be a juggernaut Nashville Predators team. Was that series result, was that the result of that series, was it a shock to the system, to the core of the Chicago Blackhawks organization? Did they maybe experience their mortality? And that's a little dramatic, but you know where I'm going with it. Maybe experience their mortality for the first time ever in the course of that series?
Yeah, I think there were a lot of signs during the regular season that what we saw from the Blackhawks wasn't all true. Obviously, they've had a really successful regular season, but when you looked at some of the underlying statistics, some of it just didn't add up. And I think it was sort of that way with Nashville, too, where when you looked at Nashville barely getting in the playoffs, a lot of the underlying statistics said the Predators were a really good team. So, the common thought going in the series was obviously the Blackhawks were going to win it. I think a lot of people expected Nashville to give them a fight. But the way that series played out with the Predators sweeping them and the Blackhawks scoring just a handful of goals, that it was certainly a wake-up call to the organization that something needs to change, and some of the things that maybe we saw during the regular season need to change. And, you know, I think Stan Bowman since then, you know, he promised changes, and they certainly brought a lot of changes. Whether those changes will lead to differences, you know, actually on-ice changes, it's hard to see so far. They made so many drastic moves. But, yeah, I think, you know, what you saw in the last two playoffs, too, I mean, for them to be eliminated by the Blues in the first round 2 years ago in the National in back-to-back years, it kind of, yeah, it was an eye-opener to the organization in the front office that something needs to change and something they need to get back to when they were having that success even just, you know, 3 years, 4 years ago.
Scott Powers joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show to discuss the Blackhawks. Scott, there was a lot of roster turnover. Some players brought in, some players brought out. I want to start with a guy who's, you know, whose career truly sort of cut short, and that's Marian Hossa. It's surprising to say that a guy's career was cut short when he's, you know, being forced to miss the season at the age of 38. But how impactful will Marian Hossa's absence be from the Blackhawks lineup?
Yeah, no, I think it'll be huge, and I know a lot of people kind of want to say the Blackhawks are fixing the system here, where they're being alleviated of his cap hit and stuff, and I think that's something to be looking at going forward. But right now, the Blackhawks are going to miss Marian Hossa a lot. He's a guy coming off of a 20-plus goal season. He's still one of the best defensive players, certainly on the team, and I'd say, you know, still. Really in the league, where he, just the way that he backchecks, the way that he gets after it, and you know, he'd become accustomed to at least allow the Blackhawks to move him down the lineup. So even in those later years, you know, last season he played more of a third line role at times. I mean, he was a guy that could give you offense and certainly play in different roles and special teams. And then when he met that team on the bench, you know, as they've talked about both in the last few weeks, the last months, and the news came out. Everyone in the organization has talked about how much he helped change that culture and really brought in some of those younger guys when Taves and Kane, those guys were younger and still kind of learning about the league and winning. And Hossa brought that mentality and really taught those guys how to play professionally and how to win. And I think he still had that influence on the team now, where just is such a respected player. So I think there's things on the ice and off the ice they're going to miss about Hossa, but you know, when you look at last year's team, just the offensive output that he gave to, I think that's especially at the present time they're going to miss, because you know, they're taking some risks bringing other guys in and hoping for some offense. And I think Hossa showed last year that he still had a little bit more left in the tank, and whether he'd be able to keep up that pace was certainly questionable. But you know, I think Hossa still was playing at a decently high level and something that can give something to the Blackhawks for another year or two at least.
Scott, the Blackhawks bring back a couple guys they're quite familiar with. Patrick Sharp returns from the Dallas Stars. We know Sharp is sort of a veteran, you know, winding down his career at this point. But the big acquisition, the big reacquisition, was Brandon Saad coming back from the Blue Jackets in exchange for Artemi Panarin. Was it the cost certainty that Saad brings to, you know, under contract long term, whereas Panarin was going to be due for another contract coming up soon? Was it the cost certainty that was so appealing to the Blackhawks, or was it just the chemistry that he has with guys like Taves and Kane that made acquiring Brandon Saad so appealing?
So I think it's a little bit of both. The Blackhawks certainly sold the cost certainty where they know Saad's a little bit younger. He's under contract a little bit longer than Panarin. But then I think it's a trade that they're looking to try to benefit Jonathan Taves. You know, taking Panarin away from Kane is going to probably detract from Kane. But the way the Blackhawks are selling is that Kane's had success with the multiple wingers, centers in the past, and that he'll be fine. And it's been noticeable the last 2 years since the Blackhawks, you know, traded Sharp and Saad, you know, two left wingers that played with Taves often, that Taves hasn't been the same player, where his production and his game has dropped a little bit. And there was a stretch last season, I think it was pretty much from February to March, where him, Nick Schmaltz, and Richard Panik played really well together. But outside of that, the last 2 years, Taves hasn't been the same player. So I think the Blackhawks saw this as an opportunity to bring in Saad, who's a younger player than Panarin and is under cost control, but also that he and Taves have played together, you know, really well together, and they have some history there, and he kind of it really complements Taves game and how they play. And I think they foresee Richard Panik being the right wing on that line too. And Panik obviously had a breakout season last year, so I think they see that as a top line, and then kind of figuring out the second line, how that works with Kane and probably Nysmael still, and then working in Sharp or Schmaltz or a couple options there. But this move was to benefit Taves and hopefully jumpstart his game again and get him back to where, you know, when the Blackhawks were successful, that top line and Taves were certainly rolling.
Scott Power is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Scott covers the Blackhawks for TheAthletic.com in Chicago. It's going to be weird this season, Scott, to see a Blackhawks defense, without Nicklas Chalmerson patrolling the back end. He obviously traded earlier in the offseason to the Arizona Coyotes in exchange for Connor Murphy. How difficult of a trade was that for Stan Bowman to pull off? How difficult of a trade was that for Joel Quenneville to accept as the head coach?
Yeah, I think it was easier for Stan Bowman than it was for Quenneville to accept. You know, again, the Blackhawks are selling this on cost control, where Murphy's younger and under contract longer than Jarmelson was. Jarmelson's deal is going to come up here in a couple of years. You know, another guy that just Quenneville had, you know, who's comfortable with, who had confidence in, who's played a part of three cups and, you know, was still, you know, relatively young and playing really well. So, and then with Connor Murphy, it's, you know, he's younger at 24 and he definitely has upside, but, you know, there's some risk involved too. I think you know exactly what you had in Nicklas Jarmelson, and he was such a, defensive presence for that team for so long, and you know, especially when you see guys like Brent Seabrook, whose game's kind of deteriorated the last few years, and you know, they're bringing in some younger players, some inexperienced guys the last couple of years with Gustav Forsling and Michael Kempney, and you know, down the line, guys who you know, still kind of finding their place in the NHL. But yeah, I think you had something definitive in Nicklas Jarmelson, and the game was still at that high level, so. You know, I think for Stan Bowman, it was about getting younger a little bit quicker, you know, and then getting that cost control where they don't have to make a move in a few years for another defenseman. So, yeah, it'll be interesting because it was there were a few moves this offseason. I think Kane was frustrated by the Panarin move. I think Quenneville was frustrated with the Jarmelson move. But, you know, Stan Bowman thought he was doing best for the Blackhawks, and I don't think there was as much consideration about how this affected people's feelings rather than what he thought was, you know, what was going to make the Blackhawks successful again.
It's a cruel business sometimes. Scott Power is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Scott, you mentioned Gustav Forsling in the last your last answer. He bounced between the Blackhawks and the Rockford IceHogs last season, 38 games with the Blackhawks, 30 games with the IceHogs. Is he ready, in your estimation, to play a full season with the Blackhawks? And if he isn't, how much trouble does that put the Blackhawks defense in? Because they certainly are thin even with him on the back end.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, he should be a lot closer. Last year he wasn't expected to be, you know, staying in North America, and he had an option to go back to Sweden. And they thought the Blackhawks would take that option, just give him a year over. And, you know, he looked really good in a rookie camp and then training camp and then preseason games, where they decided to keep him, and the Blackhawks ended up having eight defensemen for an early portion of the season. And and then he had some, you know, ups and downs and some struggles, and they come down to the AHL and, you know, got some time there. And you would think a year older, you know, a little bit more experienced, that he's ready. And he definitely has some upside where, you know, he can skate, he can shoot, he, you know, he plays a pretty solid game, kind of learning. I still think last year's kind of learning North American ice and, you know, playing on a smaller surface and all those type of things that kind of come with that transition. But, you know, I think the Blackhawks foresee him being having a larger role this year, and down the line they need some of these younger guys to really pan out when, you know, as Keith and Seabrook and all these guys, you know, they become older veterans, and the Blackhawks certainly relying on him to be that. And then Michael Kempney, too, is, you know, another left-handed shot. You know, was kind of in and out of the lineup last year where, you know, times he gets consistent stretches and then was a healthy scratch at times too, and then they re-signed him. So, you know, they're expecting him to take a step. But I also think, you know, that they signed a guy like Jordan Eberle, Jordan Osterley, that that they feel like has potential, and you know he's played pretty well in the American League too. So they could see Ulster Lee kind of step in and maybe help those guys out too, or if one of those guys struggle, maybe they have some backup plans, and they have a bunch of younger guys in the system too, like Eric Gustafson and guys coming up that they feel like they that have a chance too. So it'll be interesting how that plays out, because when you look at the playoff roster even from last year for the Blackhawks, when you talk about Oduya and Ben Riemsdyk and Campbell and Jarmelson, those are guys who played in all four playoff games, and the Blackhawks have changed that back end drastically in 1 year. So they're certainly relying on a lot of guys that didn't play as big of a role last season.
It'll certainly be an interesting season to keep an eye on the Blackhawks. Two straight first-round exits, very un-Blackhawks-like, a lot of roster turnover. Be interesting to see how that plays out. Scott Powers covers the Blackhawks for TheAthletic.com in Chicago. Scott, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us. Have yourself a great summer. Take care, Scott. When we come back, Dave Jamieson from TSN 1260 in Edmonton joins us to touch base on the Oilers, see what their offseason's been all about. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, in studio here at TSN 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend from TSN 1260 in Edmonton, Dave Jamieson, joins us now. Dave, sounds like the City of Champions moniker is coming back to Edmonton between the Eskimos being undefeated and the Oilers looking like a sincere Stanley Cup contender. We may have lost Dave. We've lost Dave. We'll get Dave back on the line. And that was such a good opening. I mean, come on. I can only think of good openings like that every now and then. You might even hear it as a repeat coming up momentarily. Dave's going to join us to talk about the Oilers' offseason. Really going to ask him specifically about how expectations have changed. They're no longer sort of the cute Edmonton Oilers story anymore, certainly not with Connor McDavid there. They are now the Stanley Cup contender. Edmonton Oilers, truthfully, when you have McDavid in your lineup, clearly you now have the chance to win the Stanley Cup at any conceivable time. Dave, are you back now?
Yes. I don't know what happened there, but it's always the technology. Always blame the technology.
Yeah, the hamster got a little tired running on the wheel, I think, is what happened there. I had a great line to start, Dave, saying how the city of Edmonton, it's almost back to being the City of Champions. You got the Eskimos, they're undefeated. You got the Oilers with, certainly they have Stanley Cup aspirations entering this 2017-18 season, and then there was just dead air, went all for naught.
Well, probably you couldn't believe you were saying those words, but yeah, it's these are heady times. The football team looks really good, and that's always a good thing. And the people in this city have been waiting a long time to talk in glowing terms about the hockey team, but they've got reason to. It's a strange thing in the show that I do on TSN 1260 in Edmonton. It's funny to hear from Oiler fans who are still somehow not confident about there, and maybe that's after 10 years of being among the very worst, if not the worst team in the NHL for many of those seasons, that there's sort of they think it's a bit of a mirage, and I'm not sure why they would feel that way, given that they have the best hockey player in the world, not named Sidney Crosby, playing here. You've got, hopefully, Leon Draisaitl when that deal gets done, and you go down the roster, and if they're not a Stanley Cup, presumptive Stanley Cup champion this year, then you have to think it's a couple of years out that they could be talked about in those terms.
I agreed wholeheartedly. Let's talk about that Draisaitl contract. We know he's an RFA. We know that McDavid got his long-term deal done at $12.5 million per season. What's Dreisaitl asking for? You know, not specifics. You might not know that, of course. But, you know, ballpark, what do you think he could legitimately ask for, given what McDavid just signed for?
Well, it's a, I'm going to answer with kind of a non-answer, just to, because it's, we don't know the number that they're seeking. I mean, a lot of it is conjecture at this point, and people are basing it on, you know, with the announcement yesterday of the Predators getting the deal done with Ryan Johansson, some people were quick to say, well, okay, maybe that is, you know, you can draw some lines between the numbers there and maybe Dreisaitl, what he could or should get. You know, there seems to be a fear of overpayment on Dreisaitl. And it's interesting, again, to go back to the Oiler fan, you know, they love their team, but and everyone acknowledges that McDavid should have gotten the money that he did get in this new deal. But somehow with Dreisaitl, people default to, he's only had one good year. Do a bridge deal and then, you know, reward him after the bridge deal. Well, given what we saw, they could do a bridge deal, and he might be more expensive. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if they can lock in now to, let's just pull a number, 7, 8, or 8 million, let's say, you've got cost certainty. Yes, it's a lot of money, but that's money you know you're committed to, whereas a bridge, frankly, I think you're just delaying the inevitable, which is he gets paid.
Well, it's having the talent that he has is certainly a good problem, I would argue. But
that's what I always say. Man, think of the years when you know, the most pressing issue the Oilers had, they had many, but none of it included, what do we do with two of the best young players in the sport?
Yeah, it's what I call a high-class problem, I believe.
Yes.
The big off-season acquisition wasn't an especially busy year off-season for the Oilers, but they traded Jordan Eberle to the New York Islanders. They get Ryan Strome back instead. Strome, who was certainly inconsistent with the Islanders, sort of sounds a lot like Jordan Eberle in that case. Is this a case of both teams, or particularly the Oilers from that perspective, hoping to, you know, get Ryan Strome into a new situation and maybe he can harness the talent that he has?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely it. And I think what was the death knell for Jordan Eberle here, I mean, and let's, you know, you have to acknowledge that Jordan Eberle, whatever misgivings you may have about the defensive side of his game, you know, he consistently produced points. Now, you only get two assists in the playoffs, and it's the first time you ever see the playoffs. That, for a lot of Oiler fans and maybe management, was revealing. You know, if this is Eberle playing in the postseason for the first time in his career, this is something that, you know, you hope that he's been dying to do, and you would expect he would be anxious to produce, and he turns in the kind of performances that he did, and the results were negligible. I think that probably was the last thing they needed to make the decision that they did. Are they going to be better with Ryan Strome? I don't know, but, you know, we're a year removed from Adam Larson from New Jersey for Taylor Hall, and, you know, there are still critics of that deal, and there may always be critics of that deal. The overall, you know, if you go back to what we're all here for, at least the Oilers are, is to improve as a team, then Larson was a significant part of the improvement as a team.
Dave Jamieson, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave covers the Oilers for TSN 1260 Radio in Edmonton. You mentioned Taylor Hall. We talked about Eberle. Those were sort of the two guys from the previous Oilers regime. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins still there, still sort of estimated for a second line center role. Is he still going to, is he now long term for the Oilers? Is he going to be there, or could you see him being dealt out as the next sort of old wave of Oilers players?
The first attempt at the rebuild. I believe that there's great value in Ryan Nugent Hopkins, but here's the thing that I think hurts him in the perception of some Oiler fans is, given where he was drafted, given the expectation when you're taking a player that high, you think, sometimes wrongly, that you're going to be getting some sort of an offensive driver. And he's not that. He does many things very well. He's diligent at the smaller, finer details of hockey. He makes very good decisions. He's an excellent passer. I think he's, you know, could get better in the faceoff circle. I believe him to be an asset, not a drag on the organization, but then you go to what he's being paid. And, you know, we live in a cap era, so you can't you know, take that out of any evaluation of him. But at the same time, I believe that he should be here. But you know, again, Peter Chiarelli has done a great job, masterful job of reimagining this franchise. It's bigger, it's tougher, it's more talented, it's a whole bunch of things. And I think Nuge has a spot in there, but I'm not quite sure, you know, if he'll be an Oiler for life.
Dave Jamieson, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave covers the Oilers for TSN 1260 in Edmonton. Dave, Jesse Puljujarvi, fourth overall pick back in 2016. What are realistic expectations for him this season? Is he going to be given every opportunity to crack the Oilers lineup?
Yeah, yes, he will. I don't know. Can you ever have realistic expectations in a Canadian NHL city?
No, you can't.
The physical attributes are there. I mean, here's the thing. With the Oilers actually becoming a good, if not great, team, they didn't need Puljujarvi last year. They can take the necessary time to let a player mature, figure out not just the game on the ice, but what living in North America, all of the things that ultimately will help him as he moves through his career. They didn't have to rush the front end of it. And so I, like a lot of people, are anxious to see what he looks like with a year in North America under his belt. Yes, I believe he should have a fairly prominent role here. I don't know what that means. I hate when people try to project points, especially on young hockey players. I mean, is he an NHL caliber player? Yeah. Yes, I believe he is. I don't know what role that will look like in his first full season up here.
Dave Jamieson, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave, last year, we all know how many games that Cam Talbot played. It was a significant number, more than you would want. He made 73 starts last season for the Oilers. How much of a priority is it to give him a little bit more rest this season, with backup Brossoit available?
Well, here's the thing. You know, in the media, we assume that we know what we're talking about, and sometimes we do and often we don't.
Always a scary proposition.
Yeah, and so last year one of the narratives that got repeated a lot was, oh boy, they're working Cam Talbot too much. And you know, they asked Todd McClellan and he said doesn't seem to be a problem and we're better when he's in there and he's not injured and he's not, there appears to be no fatigue, mental or physical. They asked Talbot, and he's fine, and kind of shrugs and goes, why are people asking me this all the time? So it's a funny thing. I mean, we celebrate the goalies through the history of hockey who were the Iron Men, you know, the Grand Fuhrers, but, you know, there's a long list of goalies who played a lot. And then when it actually happens in this day and age, we're either worried for the player, worried for the team, or skeptical of the whole thing and feel that it reveals some sort of a hidden problem. If you're good, you're winning, I'm of the opinion you play him. Now, I think ideally they would like to get maybe, 17, 20 games out of Laurent Brossoit. If he's up to the task, then great. But if he isn't, do you want to go out and waste time and or money investing on a quote-unquote proven veteran? And they thought they had that in Jonas Gustafsson, and he was... he was an abysmal failure.
Dave Jamieson is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave covers the Edmonton Oilers for TSN 1260 in Edmonton. Dave, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for joining us, and I'll let you get back to your weekend.
Take care. Thanks.
Thank you, Dave. Let's head to break. When we come back, by popular demand, I'm going to re-air a segment we did back in October talking about Mike Smith, former Winnipeg Jets general manager, as a pioneer. Not a word many Jets fans would use to describe him, but a pioneer nonetheless. Let's listen to this clip coming up next here on TSN 1290.
On the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Twenty minutes after the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, official golf course of Illegal Curve Hockey. Bell Acres offers an 18-hole championship golf course that golfers of all levels can enjoy. For more information or to book a tee time today, visit bellacres.com. right now, send me a text to 129090 with the subject being three-legged chair. And I'm going to give away two tickets, two passes to Bell Acres Golf and Country Club. Standard messaging rates do apply. Send me a text to 129090, three-legged chair. That's what I want to see. And I'm going to give away a couple passes to Bell Acres Golf and Country Club. I played this clip, this following audio. It's from an ESPN.com podcast. I played this back in October of 2016. Had a lot of requests to hear it again. Given that it's the end of July, I thought this would be a good opportunity to play it again. This is from a 538.com and ESPN.com podcast talking about pioneers in sports. And they profiled former Winnipeg Jets 1.0 general manager Mike Smith. Enjoy this clip. On the other side of it, Josh Cooper is going to join us.
We have the Jets moving into position now to make their first pick. And here's what the Jets are looking for. Some goaltending long-term, I guess, Bob, and two-way wingers with some size.
The 1992 draft was the first one after the Soviet Union collapsed. The Toronto Sports Network announcers called it the year of the European.
They go to an American. Mike Smith, of course, very strong in the European influence, especially Russian. Let's see if they jump in on one of those two big wingers.
The Jets were looking for a winger, and there were two great Canadian wingers still left in the first round. It was a no-brainer to pick them, right? Well, not for Mike Smith. Instead, he went for...
The Winnipeg Jets are very honored and pleased to select Sergei Botan from Dynamo Moscow.
I didn't even catch the last name on that one. Leave it to the Winnipeg Jets and Mike Smith.
They have found an unknown Russian player.
Well, look at Mike Smith laughing. He's getting a big kick out of this because he says, nobody knows who this guy is. And you know what?
This secret could
prove to be one of the embarrassing moments of the draft where you're sitting there and you're saying, who the heck is this guy?
Well, it sounded like Sergei Bozman.
It was actually Sergei Bouton, a defenseman from a small town in what's now Belarus. After Bouton, Mike Smith went on to use 8 more of his 12 total draft picks on players from the former Soviet Union. That was on top of all the other players he drafted in previous years who were just starting to make their way to the U.S., like this guy.
Hi, I'm Alex Zhamnov. I used to play for Winnipeg Jets from 92 to 95.
Alex remembers the first time he met Mike Smith at the Canada Cup in 1991.
He brought me jersey and with number 10 and jersey Winnipeg Jets. So and he said, like, just keep working and we're going to wait for you when you're ready.
The next year, Alex arrived in Canada, speaking no English. So even simple things like going out to eat became...
Difficult. It's maybe go restaurant because you can read and you can speak. So I always order like Caesar salad and steak. That's all what I know in that time.
I think off the ice, I don't think it was easy.
Jay Grossman was an agent for many of the Russian players of the early 90s, including Alex.
I mean, if you could think about basic things like buying a house or buying a car, or, some of these transactions were a lot different in North America than they had been for them or their parents back in Russia.
And then there was Winnipeg to contend with.
Winnipeg, one.
Winnipeggers have an affectionate nickname for their hometown, Winterpeg. The weather is brutal.
Those years when I grew up in Russia, yeah, we have like a lot of snow, cold winter, but compared to Winnipeg, I can say Winnipeg much colder city in Moscow. You go to a restaurant, but your car still run the engine because you don't want to like freeze in that like after when you come back after dinner. So.
It was a small city that felt like a small town, especially compared to Alex's hometown of Moscow.
Anywhere you go, there everybody recognizes you. It's kind of tough to go someplace and sit quiet. So always, like, people come and talk to you, try to talk to you. And first time, really, it's I have no idea just what the guys ask me. I just smile and go. It's easy live when you win, but when you lose the games, it's tough. Sometimes it's better stay home.
It was very difficult for some of our Russian players once they came. There's a number of Canadian national media people that went after the Russian players. We had people from cars who yelled at our Russian players, "You commie bastards, go back to Russia."
And then on the ice, Zhamnov had his own set of struggles.
Much faster game, tougher in a small rink. You just have to learn, you know, like have to take time for adaptation because everything is different, you know. It took me too, like, a little while. Like, I remember I scored, like, first goal probably after 16 games.
It might have taken him 16 games to score, but once he got into it, Alex was able to put up great numbers for the Jets.
He's behind the defense, has a breakaway. Zhamnov
scores! Down the right side, Zhamnov looking again. He shoots, he scores! What a move! His fifth of the game!
Mike also drafted the goaltender Nikolai Khabibulin, and he'd go on to be one of the best goalies in league history. When Mike got these really talented Russian players, he knew how to use them. The Russians didn't want to play dump and chase, and neither did Mike.
Like, you would ask a player who played for a coach to dump it in, the player would say to his teammate, "We work like hell to get the puck, and then he wants us to dump it in." But, you know, why would you take a Rolls Royce and make it into a battering ram?
Mike had a different idea in mind. He would take the best parts of Soviet and Canadian hockey and combine them into one strategy. The teamwork, the camaraderie, and the playmaking he'd borrow from Russia. The physicality, the strength, and the individualism he'd take from Canada. At a moment when the political barriers between Russia and North America were falling, the former enemies were also coming together in the rink to make hockey magic.
Mike, in particular, had always called it a hybrid style, where you had an equal amount of skill, passing, playmaking, puck possession game with the physicality of the North American game.
Keeping track of puck possession was a new concept in North American hockey at that time. They only really counted the bare essentials: goals, assists, penalty minutes, plus minus if you were lucky. But modern analytics tells us that possession is everything. It's the best predictor of how a team will perform in the long run. And the dump and chase game produces bad possession stats. The Russian style of carrying the puck and passing it into the zone produces great possession stats. Mike understood this intuitively, even though the Jets' record didn't provide much proof that a hybrid style would work.
Undefeated streak comes to an end with their 5-3 loss to the Penguins.
Defeat the Winnipeg Jets 3-1.
Will end in a 3-3 tie.
A tie, almost a victory for the Winnipeg
Jets. In Smith's last season, the Jets' record was abysmal. 51 losses against only 24 wins with 9 ties. The fans were livid and attendance was down at home games. Even though Mike had some good ideas about players and playmaking, the problem was most of those Russians he drafted just weren't any good.
I think a fair criticism, a couple of years, we probably took a few too many Russians. But we're dragging the net across Russian hockey, hoping to find a few good players.
Ultimately, Zhamnov and Khabibulin were the exceptions. The rule was a lot of underperforming Russian players who would never quite make it in the NHL.
You had to choose some of these players based on the certain criteria that you saw. But to judge their character, to judge their transition and ability to come to North America, very hard. So, of course, you would make mistakes.
If the Russians that Smith had drafted could play, I think Winnipeg would have warmed to them.
This is Curtis Walker again, our Jets superfan.
It was just that most of them couldn't play, and I think that was that's why the skeptics kept growing and for just cause.
Here's producer Emma Morgenstern during our conversation with Mike Smith.
Why don't you think the Jets were more successful when you were with them?
We were in a rebuilding phase. We were drafting 18-year-old players. We didn't have a lot of money. We were by far the poorest team in the league. We couldn't trade for players making a lot of money. We needed another couple years.
Do you know why they let you go?
It was time. I'd been there 14 and a half years, and I'd become what they call a lightning rod. No matter what I did was controversial. Yeah, I don't know. You'd have to ask the owner at the time if he did the right thing. But you know what? I slept a lot better.
The firing happened at the end of the 1994 season. Mike Smith's Russian experiment with the Winnipeg Jets had unequivocally failed. And in the eyes of some Jets fans, Mike actually sealed the fate of the franchise.
There have certainly been disappointing ends to the season before for Jets fans. None could touch this one. As the NHL regular season ends today, the Jets will end their stay in Winnipeg.
The obituary of the Winnipeg Jets is now written, and I think I speak for every Manitoba hockey fan when I say you'll be missed. Thanks for the memories.
The Jets became the Phoenix Coyotes in 1996, 2 years after Mike was fired, but he was still very much a scapegoat.
I think Smith was an unmitigated disaster. How Smith had decimated the team was one of the factors. If they had just hung on to the players that had been drafted, maybe the fortunes would be better. They go deeper in the playoffs. Maybe that provides the impetus for the politicians and the powers that be to build the new arena that would have kept the team in Winnipeg. I mean, it's a question that we'll never know.
Even though things didn't work out in Winnipeg, the shift toward Russian players was starting to change the way hockey was played in the NHL. This is Tal Pinchevsky again.
Eventually, obviously, these European players all earned the respect of everyone in the league, and the overall style of the league did eventually change and transition.
The turning point came in the season after the Jets left Winnipeg, when the Russian Five won their Stanley Cup under coach Scotty Bowman. See, over the course of 8 seasons, the Detroit Red Wings acquired 5 Russian players. And they weren't just any old bums. Some of them were products of Anatoly Tarasov's Soviet hockey machine, like Igor Larionov, who was known as the Gretzky of Russia. Then you had Sergei Fedorov, who was a young hotshot and the breakout Russian star of the NHL. Scotty Bowman saw something in these guys.
He'd have been around for quite some time already by this point, and he did put this unit together, and he could tell pretty quickly that they had this kind of on-ice chemistry and camaraderie that made them a complete mismatch against just about everyone they played against. And they could be physical. They could do a lot of the North, you know, quote-unquote North American stuff or blue-collar stuff, but they also had a level of skill, both offensively and defensively, that other teams just they couldn't keep up with.
In other words, they were playing the hybrid style that Mike had imagined for his Jets. And maybe because it was a few more years removed from the Cold War, or because it was Detroit and not Winnipeg, or because these guys were just so good, the Red Wings fans had absolutely no trouble cheering on their adopted hometown heroes.
Appropriate, a roaring Joe Louis for 2 members of the former Soviet Red Army team. They are now Detroit Red Wings. All the way, baby.
The climate at this point in the mid to late 90s had really changed. For all intents and purposes, integrated into the NHL culture. At this point, just about every NHL team has at least 1 or 2 Russians or Eastern Europeans, and it's not really such a scandalous thing anymore.
Just a couple hundred miles down the highway in Chicago, where he'd found a job with the Blackhawks, Mike Smith was watching that night as the Red Wings went all the way.
Took the Red Wings a few years to figure it out, but they figured it out, and they went on to have a really good team for a long time.
Did any part of you kind of feel vindicated because you had kind of been one of the early adopters of this kind of, you know, looking for Russian players?
No, I never felt I needed to be vindicated. I thought what I was doing was right, and there was enough other people in the business who thought what we were doing was right. So I never felt I needed to be vindicated.
Mike Smith felt he was right all along. It's less clear if the Winnipeg Jets fans of the 90s agree with him after enduring the heartbreak of those awful seasons and then losing their team to Arizona. But maybe that's what it took for Mike to design his Russian experiment in the NHL. He just wanted to be different because he believed it would work.
Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Saturday morning on TSN 1290, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thanks to ESPN.com and 538.com for that audio that we just played about the podcast about Mike Smith. It's worth checking out if you want to hear it in its entirety. It was probably closer to 45 minutes in length, if I recall correctly. The big shout out, of course, to Peter Moran. Peter is the winner of the Bell Acres Golf and Country Club passes. Those will be in the mail to Peter. So congrats to him. And of course, next Saturday, we'll have another opportunity to give away a couple of passes. So be sure to be tuned into the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for that opportunity. Right now, we're going to go to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
And we're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend. He covers the NHL, Josh Cooper. Josh, good morning. Thanks very much for waking up bright and early in sunny Los Angeles to join me.
You know, it's interesting. I was talking to someone about your show a couple days ago, or maybe it was yesterday or something along those lines. Either way, it was recently, and just about how when I started covering hockey, how I was like, who are these guys in Winnipeg? You know, they're never going to get a team. Like, why do they keep calling me? And now look at you. You guys are all big time. You're sponsored by Bernstein's Deli. I mean, I'm very proud of you all.
And we're as proud of you, and we're proud of you too, Josh. We first met you, of course, when you covered the Nashville Predators for the Tennessean. And I want to start there, and don't worry, we'll shift the conversation towards The Bachelor, even though I have never seen an episode, and I know nothing about The Bachelor, and Ezzy's not here.
You fooled me. You fooled me with that, though, because you know a lot about it when you ask me questions for someone who's never seen the show. It's always pretty hilarious.
Well, Ezzy's the one who watches the show, so Ezzy knows more about it, and he sometimes can feed me some information. And I was listening to something earlier in the week when they provided me with some ratings information about The Bachelor. They were talking about that on that program, and apparently the ratings are down 10% or something this season, and I figure you'll be able to provide me with some detailed insight into why you think the ratings are down. I guess it's The Bachelorette right now. It's not The Bachelor. I really have no idea.
Okay. Well, we can talk about that at some point, but I know you're itching to ask me questions about the Nashville Predators, so well, fire away.
I got to start with the Nashville Predators because yesterday they signed Ryan Johansson. It's an 8-year, $64 million contract for him. He gets $8 million per season. I don't think there's a general manager in the NHL who certainly hasn't had a better offseason than David Poyle. But to get pretty much your entire team under contract that went all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals last year, and to add to that team by bringing in a guy like Nick Bonino, ex of the Pittsburgh Penguins, the team that defeated you in the Stanley Cup Finals, and to still have $5.5 million of cap space, I think the only word that comes to mind for the job that David Poyle has done this offseason is masterful.
Well, one of the things that I think has helped David Poyle to an extreme degree, and it's kind of funny because I remember when he first started, you know, as the GM of the Nashville Predators, he's been there the entire existence of the team, is that you had that, and the NHL was a league of haves and have-nots. And the salary cap brought a little bit more parity to it, but not enough initially. And then the 2012-13 lockout happened, which then basically created a situation where the cap since then has only risen very, very minimally ever since. And I think, in my opinion, that plays into the strength of David Poyle. Poyle likes to plan. Poyle likes to get guys locked up into long-term contracts. And that really helped him a lot to try to create this structure. Now, there were some bumps along the way. I think that the Shea Weber offer sheet pretty much destroyed whatever structure that he had created in his mind. But since he's kind of wriggled himself free from that contract, and granted, I mean, we know that how much he admired Shea Weber as a player and a leader, but that contract was just really difficult for the team and him to swallow. Once he got free of that deal, he was able to start making moves that really kind of, I guess, played to his long-term planning, so to speak. And that's what you're seeing right now with this team, with all these guys locked into long-term deals, on top of the fact that in the past, players didn't really want to come to Nashville because there was this belief that, oh, you know, it was kind of a second-tier market and maybe even third tier for that matter. People there didn't care about hockey. The organization could never be good enough to win the big one, or I guess win a Stanley Cup. Now you look at this roster, you look at how far they came. I mean, you can make a legitimate argument that if the team did have Ryan Johansson in the Stanley Cup final, they would have won the Stanley Cup. So I think that plays into it as well. Nashville turned into a celebrity market a bit, with all the country music stars performing the national anthem during the Stanley Cup final. And then you have, on top of that, the tax structure in the city of Nashville, in the state of Tennessee, where there's no state income tax, so he can get guys to come at lower, I guess, monetary values than what they would be making in, say, a Toronto or Vancouver because of the tax structure there. Then you're able to fit guys in on a much better sort of salary cap structure for you. And I think that all these attributes, so to speak, have played into David Poile and all of his strengths as the general manager. And I think that's led to really yet another successful offseason. I think you look at the team and you look at the roster he's built over the last 3 years, so to speak, because really that's when kind of this real aggressive sort of team building and how he, and I guess the way this team, not aggressive team building, but the way that, I guess the last 3 years were when he really started to build this particular brand of Predators hockey. Really, the only bad move he made was signing Cody Hodgson 1 year, and that was it. And I mean, I guess you also have the Cody Franson trade, but still, these weren't franchise-altering trades that were going to demolish your organization. And he's done it again. And I mean, you look at this team and the guys he has under contract and the types of contracts they have. I mean, Victor Arvidsson scored 30 goals last year. He's going to be making under $5 million a year. I mean, that blows my mind. Mm-hmm. You look at these deals, I mean, they're set up to be really good for a very, very long time. And in my opinion, I've said this even a few weeks ago, they're my pick to win the Stanley Cup next year. There's no question about that.
A bold July prediction from Josh Cooper as he joins us
here.
Bold. We like it. As he joins us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Josh, writing for ESPN.com, you talked about the impact that Connor McDavid's contract extension is going to have on the market for young restricted free agents. McDavid is, if not the best player in the league, he's certainly one of the top two, top three players in the league. What do you think the ramifications that deal will have on soon-to-be RFAs like Jack Eichel, Austin Matthews in Toronto, and of course Patrick Laine here in Winnipeg, a guy that we're very concerned about?
Well, I think that what it does kind of bring up the market a little bit, so to speak. In my opinion, I think McDavid didn't bring it up enough, just in the sense that he really could have created a situation where Edmonton would have paid him whatever he wanted. And I remember the initial report on the contract was, wasn't it something like 13 or 14 million? I mean, it was definitely higher than what he ended up getting.
Yeah,
granted, I mean, 12 and a half million is nothing to sneeze at, but still it could have been higher. But beyond that, I think that it does bring it up a little bit, but I think that in some respects he did the Jets and the Sabres and other teams a favor by not going as high as he could have. And I kind of think of, and the only reason why I say that is because I look at all the craziness that's gone on in the NBA this summer where players are really just raking teams over the coals and using their individual power to try to get as much out of the team as possible and yet also control their destinies as far as where they want to play and whatnot. McDavid could have done that by taking a shorter-term deal at a higher per-year value, and he didn't do it to try to get himself to UFA at age 25. So that's number one. Number two, again, the reported value that he was, I guess, that he had agreed to was higher initially, and just kind of reading what I had read, and this is not something that I know from anything that happened behind the scenes or whatever, it seems like he lowered it just because everyone was like, wow, that's too high. That's a lot of money. So I think he did a lot of teams a solid by doing what he did and taking less than, in my opinion, what he may actually indeed be worth on the open, or what he may indeed be worth the Edmonton Oilers, just because probably is worth more than what he's making. And I think that sort of helps out teams trying to re-sign their young stars moving forward.
Josh Cooper, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Josh, you know, you wrote about Jagr, you wrote about Doan, you wrote about Iginla and the best fits for those three. You know, here we're sitting at the end of July. Do you think they're going to get NHL contracts before the start of training camp?
You know, judging from what I talked to some scouts and former executives and other analysts around the league for that story, I think Jagr will. I think Doan will. I don't know if Iginla will, just because it seems like there's just this kind of belief that all he can really do is play on the power play and just shoot, which really in today's kind of five-on-five, even strength, heavy NHL analytics mind or NHL analytics world, that's not really very effective. Jágr can still be effective 5-on-5. Talking to people about Shane Doan, there's this belief he's a very adaptable player and can play many different situations. Doesn't have to just be a scorer. It can be a kind of a fourth line sort of, kind of energy, which is kind of blows my mind for a guy at age 40 to be an energy winger, but be a guy who can play strong along the boards and do a lot of other things other than score, and also be a leader. I mean, I actually had Shane Doan's best fit being the Winnipeg Jets. I still believe that just because I think that would, he's the type of guy who can come in and really kind of show a lot of these young players the ropes, because he really is kind of a sort of, he's a dying breed in the sense that he is just this guy who's kind of older, who just trains and still works hard, has an incredible balance in his family life and hockey life, and still loves the game and still wants to play the game. So I think he'd actually be a really good fit in Winnipeg. But just judging from the people I had talked to, it just seems like that Jágr still has an NHL future, and I'm sure he'll latch on somewhere. Doan probably does somewhere. Iginla, not so sure about. I mean, the place I had him fitting in was Calgary just because of nostalgia, because it would be really interesting to see him sort of come full circle and end there. But, I mean, I don't know where he fits anymore just because, again, he's not as fast as he used to be. He's got a great shot, but that's about it. And, yeah, he looked pretty good in L.A., but mostly it was all on the power play. It wasn't really even strength. And, again, everyone focuses so much on even strength in today's NHL. I think that his struggles there make it kind of difficult overall to kind of justify giving him a contract.
Josh Cooper joins me on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Josh, you mentioned L.A. That's, of course, where you're based. Are the L.A. Kings in sort of that dreaded tweener position where they're not good enough to really be a Stanley Cup contender and they're a fringe playoff team, and yet they're not bad enough to be bottoming out to try and really go full steam ahead with a rebuild? And not that they would rebuild when you have Kopitar, Quick, and Doughty, but they really, and Jeff Carter too, but they just really don't seem like they're anything but a fringe playoff team at this point.
I'm really not sure, because I've also been doing some work on a piece on the Kings, and I'll tell you, I'm not sure where this team is. And I say that because they do have some pretty solid pieces. I mean, remember, Tyler Toffoli had a pretty bad year last year, and he was a 30-goal guy the year before. You mentioned all the core players they have. Those guys, even though a lot of them are in their either late 20s or early 30s, are all still excellent, excellent hockey players. They do have some halfway decent young players on D. I mean, I was talking to someone the other day that they may actually be the most mobile on D they've been in a long time. I mean, Kevin Gravel has been pretty solid. Ledoux is really good. I think that overall they have some decent pieces. It's just a matter of, again, I mean, I don't know where they are. You mentioned that kind of dreaded tweener phase, but talking to people around there, it does seem like they've recognized a lot of their issues, or some of their issues may have been strategic, in regards to the kind of system that Daryl Sutter wanted his team to play. And I think that they're going to change things around there to make the strategy a little bit different so that they can play a bit of a different style that leads to more scoring chances from high danger areas. And it seems like I have no idea if Daryl Sutter, when he was the coach there, had identified this and tried to teach it and couldn't get the players to do it. But, judging from what you hear coming out of there, they at least seem to be willing to try this kind of different method. And they seem like they're delving. I mean, everyone sort of talks about the Kings analytically speaking, but it seems like they really delve very deeply into some very hardcore analytics as far as how to get this better. So, will it work? I have no idea, but I think they still have some decent pieces to at least be a playoff team. To your point, are they a Stanley Cup team with the talent they have there? Probably not, but you never know. They do have some halfway decent young talent with Johnny Brzezinski and Adrian Kempe and guys who could step in next year and be solid players. I don't know if Mike Camilleri is the answer offensively in the top six, but I mean, still he's a good value signing for them overall. So We'll see. I don't know how it's going to play out, but I do think they're trying, and I do think that they have a plan, and I think that that's better than kind of what they've been doing the last several years, when they've been trying to stay on top and kind of managing themselves into this pickle that they're in right now.
Josh, you have 30 seconds. Tell us what you want to tell us about The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, or I don't know what else is, what other options there are. Bachelor in Paradise, I guess. They had controversy.
Well, actually, believe it or not, on the ABC app here in the United States, my wife and I have been watching season one of The Bachelor with Alex Michelle just to pass some time. Okay. And I just want to say that as much as I love The Bachelor franchise, it's amazing to see the differences between Alex Michelle, who is a Harvard graduate and Stanford graduate school graduate, to Nick, who is this year's Bachelor, who I still don't know what he does, even though he was very entertaining, and I'm sure he's a smart guy. But it's certainly a little bit different than what we saw in the first season. On top of the fact that, wow, the styles that they wore were just completely different in the early 2000s than what we wear now. It's like mind blowing.
Well, thank you for that sort of insight. Isn't The Bachelorette, I can't even believe I'm asking you this, isn't The Bachelorette this season a prosecuting attorney and the daughter of a federal judge or something like that?
Yeah, no, she's legit. I was just more ragging on Nick, who I think was still very entertaining, and really that's all we need on television. But I'm just thinking along the lines of, at the start of this franchise, you had a guy who was a legitimate catch, and now you have Nick. Like, it's not quite the same. I mean, like, Nick's a good guy, don't get me wrong, but, it's not, like, it's funny. I remember when Caitlin Bristow won The Bachelorette, a friend of mine said, and this is how a waitress and a personal trainer fell in love. Like, this is what the show is. Like, it's not like this anymore, where you're trying to, land someone who's, like, legitimate, like, oh, wow, this is someone who's a real catch. It's a little bit different in today's day and age, I guess, with reality TV.
Josh Cooper provides hockey insight. He provides Bachelor and Bachelorette insight. There's nothing he can't do. Josh, appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this, buddy.
Always for you, anytime.
Take care, Josh. This Josh's appearance on the show was brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. When we come back, we'll wrap the show. We'll wrap the Saturday. We'll let you get on with your beautiful weekend. Stay tuned for Jays Baseball here on TSN 1290. One final segment coming up next here on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. I want to give a big thanks to all the guests who joined us. Dave Jamieson from TSN 1260 in Edmonton, Scott Powers of The Athletic in Chicago, our buddy Josh Cooper, and Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun. In case you missed any of the show, we'll have it available for you at some point this weekend. You can download it onto your Apple and or Android device. Subscribe, get it sent to your system each and every week. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Keener Jerseys, and Bell Acres Golf and Country Club. Support those fine Winnipeg businesses because they support the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big props to producer Rory doing a great job behind the board. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Jets news. That's IllegalCurve.com. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Next week, Ezzy and Dave will be back in studio with me. Until then, thanks for listening. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.